Hey everybody, welcome back to the MCP with Rick Alexander. Today we continue our three-part series down in Costa Rica. Today me and the Special Forces Experience crew are talking about pain versus suffering. All right, welcome back to the MCP with Rick Alexander. Today I am in Costa Rica with some of the cadre from the Special Forces Experience, including the founders Jeff and Jessica, and we're actually going to have a roundtable conversation on the difference between pain and suffering. Now I do want to qualify this conversation for a little bit for the audience, because I do want to point out that we're working through a lot of the ideas that we're going to talk about today. And we've all actually been through a pretty intense plant medicine experience within the last 48 hours. So we're still downloading some of our thoughts and just thinking through this stuff. So it might come off as more of a conversation, and that's actually by design. But I do believe that out of this back and forth and out of this debate, you'll be able to hopefully pull out some wisdom and some nuggets that sort of apply to your own life. Because I do believe that a lot of us find ourselves caught between the in the murky middle of pain and suffering, and we feel victimized by our situations. And so hopefully there's some wisdom that you guys can pull out of this. There's certainly a lot that I've been able to pull out of the conversations we've had pre-show just talking about it. So first, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go around the table and just have everybody sort of introduce themselves and then the role that they're kind of playing within the organization, just so that you guys know kind of who's talking and when. So we'll start with you, Jessica.
Hey, Rick. Hey, guys, everyone who's listening. So my name is Jessica DePazzi, and I'm the chief of brand of the Special Forces Experience. And I would say that the primary role that I play in the process is more of the transitional period. So when the guys go through the period of deciding that that's their time to exit, to then needing the space to talk about what they've gone through and to kind of reflect in that short amount of time before they're off on their way. That's what I cover. And I also cover much of the marketing with Luke.
Awesome. And that's before you go, Luke, that's actually a really good point. I didn't talk about that in the intro, but the Special Forces Experience, we have something called the process, which is what Jessica just referred to. And that's the 8-day experience up in Northern Canada right now, where people sign up for this experience, and they actually, the whole goal of this thing is post-traumatic growth. Some of you probably remember I had Jeff on the show back on the old channel. So the whole idea of the process is really to reestablish your relationship with pain and suffering and learn from adversity and sort of use that to propel yourself into what comes next. We will probably talk about the process on and off just so people understand. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Rick. Luke Montgomery here. Thanks for having us all on the show. I'm the cadre storyteller and media producer. Like Jessica said, I kind of contribute to the marketing material as well, but trying to tell our story in a coherent way, in a cohesive way together. Yeah.
Something I'd like to add on as Luke's role, if you can think back to like the movie 300, there's the guy at the end with the eye patch, and he leaves the experience to tell everyone else what's happened. That's Luke's role. He observes. He has this amazing ability to pick out what's important and package it in a way that others that aren't there can understand. It's a total superpower.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we probably progress and move more into media, the process will probably be gaining more and more traction, and you guys will see it more and more. Especially you'll see it on my accounts if you follow me. So Luke is the guy behind all of that magic. Jeff?
All right, Rick. First, much gratitude for having us on. So I'm Jeff DePazzi. I am the chief course architect of the SFE and the process. In a nutshell, I like to think that I create metaphorical pathways to help people get on their journey, during their journey, one step, you know, jumping into the hero's journey as it is. Hmm. And part of all our balance as cadre, we came up with this concept just recently, is balancing between cadre and shaman throughout this journey that people take, known as the process.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think maybe to kick the conversation off, that's something that we've started to talk about a little bit just in our own understanding and our own process of unpacking some of the pain and some of the suffering that we've gone through, but that we've learned through, is that it seems to require some sort of intermediary, some person to point you toward the lessons that are important when you're in pain and when you're in certain moments so that you can begin to pull out what is important.
Right, right. Some tools for usage along the way.
Yeah.
Tools for unpacking your own elixir. The so what of all the post-traumatic growth.
Right.
Cycling through it.
Right. And people are so used to the post-traumatic stress conversation, right? It's something that we talk about, post-traumatic stress disorder conversation that is in the media. And it's very, I think in Western culture specifically, it's very difficult for us to look at something that is traumatic as a springboard for growth.
Mm-hmm. People tend to default to likening it to failure and they don't like to approach that. But the whole point is coming up against those obstacles on purpose to overcome them, to be that best version of yourself. And as you mentioned, PTSD is one side of the same coin. And on the other side is post-traumatic growth. In the middle is where you'd best like to exist, I think, is kind of a state of truth, I guess, and understanding of yourself.
I really like that we're bringing up the word failure right now. This was something that was coming up for me back when we were doing our Daime experience together, which maybe we'll touch on later. But this thought that failure comes in three forms. There's the individual failure of, like, often in business we think of, you know, wanting to achieve something, wanting to make a certain amount of money, wanting to get a certain amount of clients, have a type of impact, and not getting that your first, second, third try or whatever. And then there's that collective failure of looking around at our society and seeing what as a group we're all doing wrong that we're playing into. And it's not necessarily our fault, air quotes, but we're playing into this process of failing as a society. But I think, like, with the process in particular, what it brings up after you go through a bunch of the layers of eating this shit sandwich that we've all created for these guys to go through is this biological failure, the fear of not continuing on with your life. In other words, death.
Mm.
And when you put yourself into this situation where you actually feel like you might not come out on the other side, it creates a sense of failing, I'm failing, and you want to pull back and you want to quit. But on the other side of that, there's no way to refine your ability to be a human without experiencing these hard aspects of yourself. Otherwise, you're just stuck at level one. You're stuck at your first success and that's that.
Yeah, and I think that's the relevance of this conversation, which is, like, nobody gets to get out of failure. Nobody gets to get out of pain. But we have developed an aversion to pain based on fear, like you were bringing up there, the fear of it. It seems like a lot of people, you know, we were talking about people don't tend to look at healing as a painful experience. And so we've created this sort of fear wall around it that has us making decisions that move us away from fear, it seems to me.
If I can touch on something, Rick.
Yeah.
Pain is a biological response to something adverse that's happened, whether it's trauma or mental.
Mm.
And that fear builds up that wall so that we avoid it, right?
Sure.
I think the rub comes, and this is why we believe in post-traumatic growth and using pain and suffering, is it's that springboard for growth on the other side. When you overcome it, when you face it head on, pain or suffering, and we can debate the semantics eventually, but that's the key element. You don't go down a deep growth path without something to induce that in some way, whether it's a psychedelic, whether it's an experience, whatever else the tools are out there, music, there's probably lots of them that can invoke those states of pain and suffering.
Jeff, you mentioned, like, the semantics that we'll eventually get into more and more. But I think I hearken us back to a time a few days ago when I brought up a developing perspective I took on the process and what happened up north, and how I've kind of likened it to a different, maybe more organic. Organic is also a word we can get into, but, like, an approach that psychedelics takes us to, our plant medicine took us to. A lot of people obviously use that avenue for healing, but I wanted to talk about how we define suffering and pain. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening, or, you know, out there who look at the pain and suffering in their life, and this doesn't seem helpful to me at all. It just feels like my tires are spinning.
Mm. Or I'm being victimized.
So when we, yeah, sure. And we're talking about it being a driving force for growth and for healing. And maybe where I see it is, you know, how Jessica brought up our experience and the experience of many in plant medicine. The more you resist, there's that adage, right? The more you resist, the scarier and it gets, and the more suffering seems to ensue. but there seems to be a difference, and maybe we can decide on a word or how to define suffering. So being stuck in your life or not excelling or not growing, that seems to be a different kind of suffering as opposed to accepting and surrendering and going through a positive healing vitamin kind of suffering. Mm-hmm. So whether we figure out on how to define that or not, I think in our semantics or in our wordage, the experience up there seems to define that in and itself. And the conversation I had with Jeff before our ceremony was a little bit about how I've grown to see the process. It took me a little while to get there, but it just seems like there's some comparable states up there with these men in the bush just suffering in a raw way to actually being under the influence of a plant medicine and a guide.
So that's the key aspect of the cadre in this role,
right?
Is you're saying that the suffering between, you know, someone getting sick or something and the suffering that we induce as different. They're not different. I think that lots of what happens minus fast trauma, people don't recognize the lessons that are in there. You know, most cancers on earth are because of things we've put in our body and we're not realizing the lessons. Our body is telling us things well before we get the cancer, whether it's through getting obese or poor mental states, whatever it is. And we're just not listening to those signs. And that's kind of the key, I think, difference there is that we're there to bump you. You know, it's your journey, so no one's going to tell you what it is. But you gotta, as you're traveling, you get bumped in certain directions. And then what happens with other people is they get stuck in that suffering pit because they don't know where to go, how to get out of the environment, who to ask. They don't have the tools for that. I think that's a primary difference.
One of the words that's coming up for me now as we're talking is this, I don't know what the definition is right now. I think I might get to it as we go through this conversation, the difference between pain and suffering. But this word that's coming up between like productive suffering and a non-productive one is this underlying resonance of panic. And a lot of times we think of the word panic as chaos, like moving around really fast. But if you think about like in your normal day, how does that feel? And to me, it often, when I'm just like rushing through the day, it's to get to the end of the day or to get to some productive state where I feel like I've done what I'm supposed to do. And do I ever feel that peace? It's like this underlying kind of tone of panic throughout my whole day that exists. And I think that to me is me trying to get away from suffering as fast as I can so that I can get into this success state, this peace state. And what I've learned recently and through experiencing these guys going through the process is the ones that really thrive in these states of suffering and pain are the ones that settle into it. They find the sweetness in suffering. They learn the lessons from it. They settle in. They literally, you don't see the panic in their eyes. And after it's done, they need to process it in their own way, but they wait for it to pass rather than just scurrying away from it as soon as possible.
So it seems like there's something, based on sort of the definition that you're talking about right now, it seems like there's something in like disorder that we just can't learn from, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like you can't organize it in your mind, you can't find the lesson, you can't find out whatever it is that's pertinent that the pain is trying to teach you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you don't teach somebody to swim while they're drowning. You know, you can't learn to swim while you're drowning. That might be a bad example because if you settle into drowning, you might drown. But just imagine if you had the tools to settle in and remember your minimal bit of training when you were a kid, which is hold your breath and float.
Right, right.
You know?
But that's what we do. We learn to swim over a period of time, right? And in order to suffer properly, you have to learn it over a period of time. You don't go from zero to throw them in the pool and hope that the lesson will be there in perfection.
Right.
You know, you teach them that the water's not going to hurt you, then you put your toes in, and then you do that. That's how I think proper suffering.
Yeah, that's the value in these ready-made experiences, is that you get to teach yourself on your terms how to suffer. Mm-hmm. That was like, that became very clear to me in the endurance world, is like, I started just because I was like really into the endurance world, and then I turned to philosophy realizing like, oh no, I'm like teaching myself tools on how to cope with suffering that I'll be able to take with me. And I think to your point, like that's it. Like most of us wait, I don't want to say most of us, I have no idea about a percentage, but it seems like a lot of people wait for the house fire to panic instead of teaching themselves how to deal with it prior to.
I really like the story you were telling us earlier about how guys that you were training or maybe you're putting through selection, I'm not exactly sure what the situation was, but the guys that hadn't seen adversity, but they were top notch in terms of their physical ability and just like on paper, amazing, but the guys that were scrappy and had somewhat of a tough life, they were the ones that thrived, right? When shit hit the fan and they were facing something that wasn't on the schedule.
Yeah, right. So like putting what she's referring to is like putting people through the special warfare selection. It just became very obvious. And Jeff, you said the exact same thing about the Canadian Special Forces selection, is that you see people who, you know, they've been very successful in their lives, and for whatever reason, that's what they come up to the adversity that you'll see in a selection course or something, because there's going to be something there that you just can't cope with. Like you'll find failure in some way, mentally or otherwise. And when you do, if you've not learned to suffer, if things have come easy to you your entire lives, then you don't understand how to cope with it. And that was the actual thing that taught me that learning to deal with pain or resistance or adversity is an actual skill in and of itself.
Yeah, like Jordan Peterson says, if you don't hone your character, adversity will mow you down. I think the rub of it is that character is such a, okay, what's character kind of in the word? I think if you don't work on who you are and hone your identity through adversity, suffering, however you want to word it, it will mow you down eventually in all its forms.
And that seems to be exactly why our political systems today are so, they feel so irrelevant to the actual life people live.
Mm.
Because these guys, character to the political system is not making any mistakes. Having the foresight, air quotes again, to see so far in the future that you've never made a mistake, you've never seen a failure, you've never done anything to embarrass yourself or your family or anything. And that makes you qualified to run a country or to represent a community in it. We were talking about this earlier, like, how absurd is that? How is that guy or woman capable of facing shit when it hits the fan, like the rest of us have to? And I don't want to change the subject too much to go into like why pain and suffering may be beneficial. I think we were initially trying to figure out what the difference is.
Well, yeah, so there's no time like the present to do it. You know, suffering, our bodies are designed psychologically and more importantly, biologically to resist pain and suffering. Chopping off your arm is not good for you. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And when the psychological element developed, it developed off those, the evolution likes to take the shortcut, right? And build on top of itself. So it took those portions of pain and laid them on to psychology. And I'll take a first little swing here. Pain is chopping off your arm, and suffering is hurt that in a psychological way that you can face, you know, that usually is laid out over a longer time period.
It could be coping with your arm being lost. Like, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah. Whatever the lesson is, right? That's why pain developed. Pain. So you touch the hot stove.
Right.
Oh, damn, that's hot. Okay, I've learned my lesson. Don't touch the hot stove, right? Where seeking post-traumatic growth and, as you mentioned, Rick, the arenas to find these things in a person in a way that is tailor-made, so you don't have to chop off your arm, so to speak, to learn those lessons. And I think people have issues differentiating, you know, we're a little lazy by nature. Nobody wants to chop off their arm, kind of like proverbially, you know.
Right.
So all our tools psychologically tell us not to face it.
Right. So I've often heard that pain is inevitable and suffering is optional, because suffering, I guess what I took from that was that suffering was maybe the resistance to pain. But as I laid there writhing in pain the other night, I realized I felt as though I was suffering and I was not resisting. I don't know. And maybe that's me trying to pull it apart in my head a bit.
Well, I also think like an attempt to ground or ground the conversation of suffering in the sense that a lot of people may listen to this and or they may brush over our content online or hear about the Special Forces experience. A lot of people get caught up in this idea and become averse to it, that a meaningful or the good life is all about suffering. There's a lot of like struggle porn or suffering porn, you know, out there, that just life is just a grind, or just like subject yourself to eternal suffering,
right,
and become a beast. And like, I think the idea that we can sum up here and probably all agree on, and it was so clarified in the experience the other night, is that it's about flexibility. It's not about like subjecting yourself to eternal suffering and you'll become this warrior or this best version of yourself, but to be open to it and also accept the good things, the easier things in life, or whatever, however you define that too. Like, let love into your life and also let suffering into your life. And that balance and that flexibility in your character, your soul, your mind, body, and soul is really at the heart of what we're doing, I think. And
yeah, you can't what taste we're the sweet about. Without the sour.
Right, yeah.
You know, fear is a good part of your life. Love is a great part of your life. They're both great parts. It's using them wisely to navigate.
That was actually something that became very clear to me is like when we don't face our pain and we don't face the things, it's actually not just that we're not gaining the tools to face future pain, but it's actually because pain and it's so interwoven in our lives as humans and finite creatures and that are all going to end. Actually, what you lose is the ability to, or actually what you gain are coping mechanisms to deal with pain. And the unfortunate part of coping mechanisms is that you don't get to control how they come out in your character. And so that's hard for people probably to understand if you've not done some inner work or deep work to try to dive more into your authenticity. But one of the things that became very clear to me is like at a young age, I wasn't taught how to deal with a certain kind of pain. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I had learned all of these coping mechanisms. And it carved away at my ability to be courageous. So I didn't have, when I was younger, you know, when I was like 10 years old, let's say, and I'm first exposed to some kind of emotional pain or psychological pain, and I didn't have the tools then to deal with it. And because I didn't know what to do, it's like you get redlined in pain. You don't know what to do. As a 10-year-old, you just shove that experience pretty deep, right? But then what you don't realize at the time is that you've now developed something so that you're not going to be able to sit in that anymore. And so what I used to think of in my life was courage was actually me just stuffing it down and like trying to go above it and not actually face the real issue. And so I could see all of these times in my life where I felt like I had been courageous and there's an element of courage in my life, but where I was really missing was my ability to sit in pain and like look at it for what it is and ask like, what are you actually teaching me right now? Like that was a skill I had bypassed because I didn't know what to do when I had it.
Jeez, there is something really interconnected between physical pain and emotional suffering that I like you haven't. I felt like I'm being a good person. I'm being like high vibrational by just dealing with things what I thought was gracefully, which is don't over emote, right? When something happens to you, like just deal with it on your own and that's that. But it all came out for me when I experienced physical pain like I've never experienced before in my life. Everything came up for me. And I think that there's some kind of weird connectedness where like you experience some sort of issue, like biological issue with your body, that then emotions start happening. It's like the work that Dr. Brian Pinko does, where he will physically tap into your face, these meridians, and then he can evoke an emotion from that, and he can help you release an emotion. And it sounds like complete voodoo, and he admittedly is like not really sure how it works, but the fact that it does work on people that are total skeptics is just, for me, like proof that there's something here where you sometimes need to experience physical pain in order to bring up some of these emotions that you've suppressed in order to get through with a certain point of your life productively.
It'll highlight those coping mechanisms, as you mentioned, Rick. Those, even if you live an easy life, there's probably going to be some kind of emptiness, and that emptiness is probably a emotional coping mechanism that you put in your toolbox that isn't working right. And the only way to go out and find them is through some kind of adversity, pain and suffering that will bring you into those states where your mind has to go in a little bit, and it looks at its coping mechanisms as it's going through, and it's like, okay, well that's not actually working, or that is working, or I can develop this new one. And it's only in those states that you can find them.
Yeah.
And that's why people seek this kind of thing. And they don't really know usually most people don't have the words or the tools because it's a pretty nebulous topic.
Right.
But if there's any kind of void in you, it's probably because you got a improperly developed coping mechanism out of childhood. Like you were saying, sometimes kids will learn to stuff and that's almost never good. Or they'll violently react. That's not good. All kinds of inempathetic tools as well, you know, and it's all about unpacking those things as you go through and, you know, figuring them out. And I'm sure people are listening and they're asking the question, well, can you go through life without pain and suffering and learn these things? And I think that's the million dollar question. when it all comes down to it. Like, as people are going through all these things, you know, and they think, okay, well, plant medicine will do it. Well, I can tell you from my experience, really, you're almost basically lying there dying and your body's fighting it. So you are going through pain and suffering to find some answers. And there's just many different arenas, vessels we can do that in.
I think that all feelings are a journey. And you are dishonoring yourself and others around you if you don't accept that the emotions that you have are real, and that they should be, like, you should see them almost like a blessing. And I think that kind of right now there's this movement to express everything that you're feeling, which I don't necessarily agree with either. You know, coming from off of like World War II and this generation of people who really were not emotive, you know, you're in survival mode for sure. You just stuff down your feelings. Now, as a result of that, this new movement is like overexpress everything. And that to me is completely like wrong as well. You're just like dumping your shit on other people. That's not right.
Right.
But I think that there is this middle ground where you can honor your feelings and have a really conscious way of like feeling into what needs to be expressed to other people in terms of suffering and like what doesn't. So I think that's another important thing to bring up, is that you may be suffering, and some people who are listening may know people who are suffering through life and are constantly talking about it. And that is not what we're talking about. Like, you have to do the work to understand like how to differentiate between long-term just pattern cycles and trying to go through your own kind of talk therapy in the world versus understanding that pattern and then sharing it with people who you really feel can help you or just sit with you.
Yeah. I think that's a great point, is that like, I feel you're right. There's the people that over talk and they just kind of become these emotional vampires. So they'll just drop it all on you and you're wasn't ready for that at 9 a.m. over whatever. Right. But then I think something that almost everybody probably can recognize is a little bit of a void within themselves. And I've never actually thought of that as a disfigured coping mechanism. But like, it does seem that on the other end of going through the pain I had been avoiding my whole life, I feel to have lost a bit of that. I feel a bit more complete, a bit more at peace, a bit more whole. And so almost everybody probably, most people I've talked to, it seems, have some sort of dissonance internally where they feel a bit empty. They feel like, and I think that's why marketers are able to prey on them and charlatans are able to prey on them, because people are promising you answers everywhere. And it's like, geez, is that my answer? Is that my answer? Is that my answer?
Yeah.
Yeah. People have been taking a stab at that algorithm forever, right? That's what religions and philosophies are. And they may have started, and some are, from a really organic and a good place with good intentions, you know, that gets swayed and used against people, of course.
Yeah.
And anyone who is on those paths, they may ebb and flow a little, but they don't feel purposeless. They'd never use the word "I don't have purpose." They wouldn't feel with void deeply, you know, and it definitely wouldn't be something that's persistent. It's that persistence, I think, that people need to recognize, okay, I need to do something different. I, you know, that kind of simple definition of psychosis is repeating the same thing over and over and hoping for a different result. If there's anything in your life that's playing over and over and over, and indications are that purposelessness, voids, emptiness, even when it's easy, you know, you need to step into something new and face it.
Right. Okay, so that, because you need to step into something new and face it. So that, to me, brings up a bit of a segue into something we've been talking about. And I don't know that we've reached an answer, which is why this is sort of a roundtable, but do you need to go into pain? Do you need to go into it with the understanding that you're going to learn from it? Or if you're on the backside of some kind of pain, traumatic experience, something that's caused you pain, can you then turn it into a springboard? Or I mean, do you have to go back and revisit it? Do you have to? I almost feel like you do. I'm trying to organize it in my mind. But there's certainly people that have pain in the rear view and they can't move forward right now.
I personally think that pain can close you off and make you more afraid of experiencing more pain, or it can open you. And I think that that has a lot to do with how you were brought up, and mostly the people around you that at a young age gave you, they were role models for you. They showed you how to go about doing the world. I think at a certain point, you don't need to know the tools before you figure out how to learn them in the fight. But like I'm thinking of just like being a kid and experiencing adversity and not knowing what to do with it. And hopefully you have somebody in your corner that's going to just explain like why losing is okay sometimes, or why that kid punching you in the face, like what did you learn from that? Did you learn forgiveness? Did you learn to stick up for yourself? Or did you learn, hey, don't hang out with people like that anymore? And I think that unfortunately a lot of people grow up learning the tools that were necessary for their parents to survive but aren't productive in their current context. And I think that's what a lot of this undoing that we're doing with the trials has to do with, is sometimes the tools you have, you don't really need. You just inherited them.
I've been ebbing and flowing between, like, let's kind of define it so that we can, you know, solution it. But, like, to me, pain ends at the physical. So, you know, pain as a just straight up pain. Say you're, you know, we'll use a really obvious one. Finger gets cut off. Impulse goes up to brain saying, oh, you're in pain. Suffering is how you store it in your mind and sit with it and work through it to like that. Build that next level.
I'm okay with that definition.
It works also with emotional stuff as well, you know?
Totally. There's a fallout always, right?
Yeah.
And so suffering is sort of how do you categorize that fallout mentally?
Hey guys, you've probably heard me mention the trials a few times now. I just want to take this opportunity to talk about the fact that I developed this program in conjunction with the Special Forces experience and some of the cadre over there so that we could help equip people with the tools to work through pain and suffering, to face things head on, to sort of take the reins back in their own life. So if a lot of this stuff is resonating with you, or if you're interested in gaining some of those tools for yourself, then check out wayoftrials.com.
Yeah, so I actually do believe that that's an amazing way to frame the conversation between pain and suffering. And so I think, you know, one of the things Jess was talking about is like, when have we dealt with pain well and when haven't we so much, right? When have we sort of stuck in that suffering? And the obvious example that comes to me and that most people can understand is a breakup, because the first, I don't know, like 5-6 breakups of my life, I've had a few, I guess. Oh. the first few breakups of my life, like I did what I think other people do, which is like I closed off and I thought like fuck women, and I got drunk and I just like kind of like used it to close myself off, and it took me 2 or 3, you know, it took me a long time before I would open myself to somebody again. And the last time that I had gone through a breakup, I actually was like, I didn't know what to do, but I did know that how I had been living wasn't, I found the cycle, like you were saying, living the same way over and over. And I thought, right now I'm raw, right now I'm open. Let me just use that to explore. And I think when the thing that I guess I would say was different for me, and this is maybe the takeaway for the audience, at least out of my experience, is when you do find something that's painful, causes pain, if you could get curious, perhaps you'll find the root, and then maybe you don't have to repeat it again, right? Because I do know that even given similar situations, it's not like now I'm in the camp where it's like, well, my relationship this time is going to last forever and ever, right? But hopefully, right? But whether it does or doesn't, I think isn't actually the point. The point is that I sort of learned how to process what caused me pain and actually used it to deepen my experience in this life. And that seemed to be the takeaway for me.
A story of mine that has plagued my life as long as I can remember. I remember it starting from the fourth grade. Even just saying that grade in my mind gives me shivers. But it was this time when I went to like a really small Catholic school, and I was bullied by all the girls. And because it was so small, I had literally had no friends until I got to high school. And the fourth grade is when I became kind of, I feel like I kind of grew up or something and realized what was happening around me. And then I categorized myself as an outcast. And after that, at this point, I'm realizing that up until even just a couple years ago, I kept putting myself in these same situations where female friends of mine would be somewhat abusive, you know, and I would just act in a way and enable like kind of just mean people to come into my life, mean women in particular. And I just kept thinking like, I'm just an outcast. I just don't belong in this type of, you know, big female friendships and all of that. And it actually took Jeff's sister once when we were just like, we've been drinking, we were like crying, you know, we're talking about all the things in our life. And she just straight up, Jessica, like, everybody has something that sucks, you know, like fourth grade sucks for everybody. She said something that was kind of like, oh, and it made me reframe and kind of embody the other girls that were in my life at the time that I had deemed as the bad girls or mean girls. And I just sat with that. I was like, what was it like to be them at that time? What were they dealing with that I was, that it was projected on myself? And then I started to feel more compassion. And it took a long time and a lot of journaling in order for me to undo this thought that they were out to get me, which seems so, so silly now that I think about it. But in that pattern, it came to a point where I'm like, okay, I'm done journaling about it. Now I need to do something different. And that was the hard part, which was going out and putting myself in different situations where I had to break the chain. And not everything worked. I tried a lot of different things, tried a lot of different clubs, and figured out what female groups I would be the best at kind of working with and being friends with. But yeah, like breaking that cycle of pain and that long self-induced indulgent suffering and putting myself in the same situation for almost a decade was like, I'm so glad I'm out of it. And I hope that I'll never have to deal with mismanaging that type of like pain again. And I feel like at this point I have the tools because I worked through it now, so that if something bad, you know, quote bad, happens, now I feel like I can deal with it more productively.
So for you, were the lessons in putting boundaries in your life around what the kind of people that had caused you that pain, was that sort of a takeaway for you?
So the takeaway for me was that I need to own who I am and speak more of like what's true to me and just basically have a voice and a backbone. And I realized once I'm more authentic, and which often it's really awkward because I have a lot of things to say that might not be agreed with. It was met with, oh, that's fine, you know? And I always thought that conflict was so bad. It scared the shit out of me. And anytime somebody would disagree with me, I'd be like, oh, I did something wrong. Like, I need to be saying things that people are agreeing with all the time. And I would say that that's actually, now that I've worked on it, it's become one of my greatest gifts to be able to say something that even if it doesn't agree with somebody, that it still kind of resonates with them. I've honed the ability to realize when it's brass and tactless versus gentle truths.
Yeah.
And so that shadow of mine became one of my greatest gifts. I'm like so thankful for.
Wow. Yeah. That's a good example of boom, a pain point, you know, mean girls in grade four, kind of instant. And then years of suffering. And that, I think that's the difference between pain and suffering. You're not in pain for the 10 years, but you're suffering.
The pain was acute.
Yeah. The pain was acute. Suffering was spread out over time. And you sometimes don't really know, because you wouldn't be like, oh, I'm suffering. You know, people over, they think suffering is Jesus on the cross, you know, right. And that it's all relative, that discussion. And I'm going to kind of take a stab with a totally different direction, because unlike, you know, everyone has their thoughts on this. I think fear and love are the opposite end of the same spectrum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one's a repulsive force and one's a drawing force, and they're both good. And when I met Jess, I fell in love like I never fell in love before. Not a pain point in the same way, but a sharp catalyst that led me into a different kind of suffering. You know what? Not even really a different kind of suffering. I had to face myself to become the man for her that she needed to be. Face all those poor coping mechanisms that I was carrying along. Mm-hmm. And I guess my kind of what I'm saying with that is that I believe pain can lead to suffering, which leads to growth if you do it right. But there's different kinds of catalysts on that spectrum. And I think people are always going right to the fear one, you know? It's always the worst case scenario that is pain. It can be on that same spectrum if you don't face it right, the suffering.
Right.
Sometimes pain is a worry about pain in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there was no pain in our love story, but it was you being so worried that it would end and you'd have to deal with it. And so in that,
It was a mental construct versus the physical, but it created that same catalyst point for the suffering, which thankfully, I would love to say that I'm there. Of course, it's a continued journey to be the best version of myself with her.
Yeah.
Not like just for her. I just thought maybe I'd take a crack at a different little perspective there.
Yeah. And that's something that, I agree with, because I've gone through, it's like something I've had to work through myself. It's like, okay.
Is there a specific example in your mind that jumps out, maybe or maybe not, for you, Jeff, where you may have, you clearly feel like you excelled or grew from that pain or suffering, and an example where you didn't? Or it took you longer, you sputtered
with like the catalyst of meeting Jess in love? Is that what we're talking about?
Or any time in your life other than, you know, where you may have not felt like you didn't grow initially, or you didn't accept it?
I would say that there's times in my life where that's probably happened.
And what the difference might be? What do you think the difference is? Like, why people would go up, for example, to the process and react well to that and grow from it, or...
Well, I think there's a billion functions of that. I think that your childhood, you know, what your genetics brings into this world, we'll start with that. We won't even go into like deep Akashic record kind of stuff, but what your genetics brings in and what your childhood brings in and what your adolescence brings in. And along the way, you know, on that walk in your path, there's probably going to be mentors, whether they're metaphysical or physical or spiritual, that kind of bumped me in those ways. And really what they're doing is they're just kind of, you're rolling with the punches, toughening you up, right, so you can face those a little bit more. As far as like people who seek growth-minded endeavors, I would like to believe that most people are growth-minded. They just are so locked up by fear, right, that they don't know how to get out of it. Do I have a solid?
Nobody doesn't want to grow.
Nope. Yeah, exactly. Right. Who? Yeah. Nobody lives a perfect existence, and even when they think they are, well, I think they should look a little deeper because they may not be contributing to the collective or not. Does that mean that I am without flaw at this moment? That would be pretty insane of me to say. And that's why I think when you seek growth, there's many tools in the toolbox of those, we'll call them the pain points, right? You know, when you're building your house, you have a lot of different tools, and there's a lot of different tools. Have I found all the tools? Have I rooted out all the things? No, definitely not. It would be complete hubris for me to say that. But if you can see it, tell me, please, because I'm open. You know what I mean? I'm always looking for like, oh, okay, I didn't see that. That's what I got to work on. I'm willing to do the work. You know, I'm not scared of that fear. And that's why I like to look at fear and love as on a spectrum. That way there, I'm not just scared of the scare to find, you know what I mean? Like, some people will try to just find the love, that what they think is the easy route to do it. But just because it feels good like love does, it doesn't mean you're becoming your best version.
You know? Right.
So that's my way of skirting around saying, yeah, no, because I legit don't. It's not that I don't want to know.
You know, yeah. What I mean? When I think of a time where I may have responded well to it, or, and a time where I didn't, I really like what you said, Jeff, about pain being, or maybe Rick, you said this, about pain being acute, perhaps momentary, and suffering elapsing over time. And it makes me want to communicate, at least in my own experience, that if suffering does end up lasting a long time, it's easy to kind of feel like, oh man, I wish I didn't spend 9, 10 plus years of my life just suffering under those shadows or those thought belief systems or that from that particular experience. And part of me feels like that's okay. When I think of devising two experiences separately, it's interesting because they're both forms of loss, I think. I would say that responding to the grief of loss of a familiar member in my family when I was young, I did not handle that at all well. It didn't look like, at least from the outside, like a growth experience. It looked like utter damage for a long period of time, more than 10 years,
and that's okay. I think,
and that's okay. And then later in my life, I would say the loss of a relationship, like you brought up, Rick, I would say, like, by the time I was in my 20s, even, I was handling that well, and I was growing from that, even though it involved acute, like, searing pain. Mm-hmm. I handled that well, and I think because I spent so long suffering in that chamber of loss earlier, I think that those two are, they have a lot of correlations together. Loss comes in many different forms. It took me so long, and I'm still working through that, and that's still okay, right? So the elapse of time and suffering is okay. And that's something also that I think came up in the plant medicine experience for me. But yeah, you're right.
There's no shame in it, for sure.
There's no shame in it. And I also think, like you said, there are billions of reasons in why I would handle one thing better and one thing not.
Right.
But I do think there's a deep value in connecting those two experiences, and thus that being a great question.
That's the post-traumatic growth cycle, if you will, though. Sometimes it's fast, you know, hand on stove, pain point. A little bit of suffering with the burn, lesson learned.
PTG.
Yeah, PTG. Don't put your hand on the stove.
Yep.
Loss of a loved one, pain point. Suffering for years,
way more pain.
First of all. Those kinds of pain, like I wouldn't compare them even. I'd rather put my face on the stove.
But the
growth cycle happens the same kind of way. Trauma, then you endure through the suffering, and then you have the growth period. It's people get stuck in the suffering period, right?
And part of me was stuck in that suffering period. But there's something else you said, Rick, of be careful with wisdom you didn't earn. So I do feel like maybe it could have been 6 years, maybe it should have been 15 years. I don't know, but I do feel like I've spent a fair bit of time earning that from that familial loss when I was a lot younger.
For sure.
And if I were to be given a magic pill or plant medicine or whatever you call it back then and just spent a year with that suffering or even a day, it's just not, I don't know. I don't have an answer for plant medicine particularly because that was quite powerful and healing. But I don't know if I'd make the choice to have left it at the curb. I think even a decade of suffering has given me so much. Even if I did spend a little too much time there, I still think no matter what window of time, you can look back at it once you move on as a lot of value.
I'm a bit esoteric, but I just keep coming back to the realization that you had to go through everything you went through to get where you've gotten. And like that's okay. Like that's your path. That's important too.
Right.
And it's so easy for us to discount our learning process or to like be harsh with ourselves in our learning process. And that in itself is counterproductive. And so I've just seen that over and over in my own life because I do think it's easy for people to do what you do. Like I should have learned quicker. I should have suffered less. It's like, what? You're human. Like you shouldn't, you're just doing your best. You know what I mean? And you learn those experiences and then you go into the next one and now you're a little more fortified and you'll learn quicker next time and you'll be better. But think about all of the, I am a huge fan of turning our suffering into medicine. Like I think I'm never going to understand Luke's suffering. You know, I really won't because it's such a deeply personal experience to suffer from something, but I could understand his medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The trick is realizing when you're in Dante's Inferno, right? When you're repeating those patterns of suffering, the length could be 15 years. It could be 20 years. Jess has worked with people who've been experiencing it for 80 years. You know, there are things though, I think you can do to get out of it. What happens is people get locked in that purgatory cycle, that suffering cycle.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to get out. They don't know how to ask for help. They don't know where to find the tools. I do believe there are tools though, but you did say it. There is, you know, there is no, how did you say it? You got to earn it in your own way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean we're a collective.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean you have to do it alone. That's the difference, you know, I think.
And by saying that, I would never, I don't think I would ever infer that, I would never encourage you to stay in it. Like, more equates more value. Like,
For sure.
Doesn't mean I could go back in time and keep that cycle going and just keep learning and learning and learning. There just seems to be some very deeply personal and unique cutoff point, or not a cutoff point, but a phase where you feel maybe an inward calling or there's an opportunity to move on, transition to the next phase and start healing from that.
Yeah.
And that's that window of time can be several days or months or years. And that's where I think suffering enters as a friend or pain or some sort of adversity. Sorry. That's where adversity enters as a friend and that can carry you on from suffering to healing.
Yeah, you need to kind of almost like a distracting point to
jar
your, you know, we can get into the cycles that are going on in your head, you know, you need like our prefrontal cycles and stuff like that, that you need to jar loose in order to kind of shine light on that suffering cycle.
Yeah. Right. So the one point is giving yourself retrospective shame for not learning sooner will continue the cycle instead of allowing you to.
That's not helpful.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think that's what I was actually trying to say. I guess, and then I want to, you know, before we end, pull out one more thing that I just heard that Jess was mentioning, which is, when you're in pain, it's very difficult to look around and ask yourself, well, what else is true? And what am I learning? And what's actually happening here? Because it does feel as though we're being victimized by pain. And like you were saying, Jeff's sister said to you, which is, you know, lots of people have gone through this. And it's very easy to feel like, oh, I'm alone in this pain. And that's just so rarely the case. But pain like has a way of making us feel that way. Mm-hmm. And so I do believe that, just for the listeners, like when you're going through pain, really, really ask yourself the tough questions. Like, is the story that I'm telling myself about this true? Because it really might not be, you know, and it's probably in your best interest to move on.
I can add on to that, pay attention to the cycle or the wave of your emotion. Everyone has a different pattern of emotion that they go through. Sometimes it's like a gradual sort of like low state into gradually high and then back down low. Sometimes it's like a high spike, high, low, da da da, all this stuff. Sometimes it's a spiral, but within everyone's emotional wave, there's always a pause. There's a point between sadness and pain and, you know, some of these more negative experiences, and then contentment and peace and success feeling. Look out for those pauses. And the only way that you can do that is by trying to avoid distracting yourself when you are going through some of these bad times. Like, don't just mindlessly watch TV, as nice as that is, honestly. Like, I do it all the time when I'm just feeling like I just need to, you know, take the edge off. But I know that those times are not productive, because the pauses thereafter, you're feeling the wave of like, blah. That's where you can analyze. You're not going to analyze when you're happy. Like, you're just happy and you don't care and you're not thinking about that.
I should stop this.
Right. Go back and remember that shitty time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pay attention to those pauses. That's where the observation, the curiosity can really like come to you.
Yeah. And understand that there's programs, there's people that can arm you with the tools for once you hit that pause to help you get back on the upcycle. And I guess, like you would say, Rick, a less hedonic way and a more authentic way.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of tools. Wayoftrials.com. Awesome. So I will leave this open then, if anybody else has anything to add.
I think just to sum up not my position, but like really what's been mulling over in my head over the past few days and brings things full circle for me is I think I can speak for us all, we would never push one solution to anyone's suffering in a specific way. Obviously, there's a big culture around talk therapy and opening up communicatively with your language, spoken language. And that's a wonderful thing. That's a great thing. And communicative exercises are the go-to for a lot of people. But in a nutshell, we ought to be exploring every option that we can to grow, and be that in all sorts of different experiences and talking and in medicines. For us, the special forces experience just falls into the category of visceral experience, right? It's like subjecting yourself to it very directly. And I now more than ever, I think I'm just such a believer in that.
Yeah. Sharpen your steel with all the tools that come along.
Right. When the time just comes, having like a robust tool belt, however you like to wear it.
Totally. Yeah.
And it's all about living life well. You know, what's the point of all of this? And I think it's just remember what's essential to your happiness, and remember essential. It doesn't mean more is always better. I think that was also a big lesson for all of us that I think many people in the West struggle with. Abundance doesn't always mean more of everything. Sometimes it means just remembering what's important, and sometimes that alone, and just eliminating certain unnecessities, things that aren't necessary in your life, can do a like ton of good in removing a lot of issues that don't need to be there.
Yep. Yeah, that's great. I guess the last thing that I want to say, and this is just, I've noticed this in my own life. This is before this experience and this trip. When you're going through something that causes you a lot of pain, or you feel victimized by life in a certain way, if you can get through it, if you can find the wherewithal, you know, it takes a long time, but if you can push through it, and then you can figure out and synthesize the things that you learned, and then you can give those things to other people, because at the end of the day, I think we probably all agree, but I really care about unfucking yourself so that you can help the collective, that you can be good for people. Like, because so many people are just going around projecting their pain onto other people, and we've all heard it, hurt people. And to me, it's like, it's such a powerful thing to be the person that stops that cycle. But it's not only stopping that cycle, if you can synthesize what you've learned through a painful experience and then you can give that to somebody else, there's nothing that will bring your life, at least in my experience, more meaning than helping people heal through the thing that caused you pain.
Right. It's good for you to be good for others.
100%. Awesome. Thank you, guys. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the show. If you did like it, this show and every show is powered by the Clarity Academy. That is our in-house training program. It's a 12-week online course developed to help you figure out the right mindset to get exactly what you want out of life and to figure out who you really are, to figure out who you were before the world made you believe that you had to be somebody else. I think your best life and the way that you're best positioned to impact this world is found somewhere in your own authenticity, in your own uniqueness, and we just aren't taught how to double down on it. So if you're interested in that, you go to rickalexander.com, click on the Clarity Academy for details. Registration is open. I would love to see you on the inside.